Welcome. You're diving deep with us today. And this one's really for you as you're navigating, property rights and government power in your studies.
Yeah, we're zoning on a big one. The California Supreme Court case, People ex rel. Department of Public Works v. Chevalier.
And Chevalier is just so significant, isn't it?
Me.
Because it really draws a line in the sand about challenging the government's need to take private land, eminent domain.
Absolutely. It sets crucial boundaries, and it's still incredibly relevant for understanding those limits.
Right. The backdrop here is the Harbor Freeway construction in LA, a massive project involved both the state and the city. And the real tension, the thing we're digging into, is this balance. The legislature says something's necessary for a public project, but what if the property owner thinks it's unjust or maybe even, done in bad faith?
That's the million-dollar question the case tackles. So maybe let's break down the basics of Chevalier first.
Good idea. So you had two eminent domain actions basically happening at the same time, and they got merged for trial.
Right, consolidated.
Exactly. One was the state trying to cut off access to 99th Street from land owned by Richard Goodspeed and William Hyland.
Okay.
And the second was the city wanting to condemn an easement, like a right-of-way, across their land to actually extend 99th Street over to Broadway.
So this specific piece of land owned by Goodspeed and Hyland near Olive Street, it was key to the whole road plan for the freeway, wasn't it?
Totally central. Now, fast forward to the trial. The jury puts a number on the land actually taken, $7,500.
Okay, seems straightforward enough.
Well, here's a twist. They also looked at severance damages, that's the hit to the value of the remaining property, but they effectively wiped those out by saying the project brought special benefits to the rest of the land.
Ah, the offsetting benefits argument. Classic eminent domain stuff. But wait, the owners, Goodspeed and Hyland, they weren't just arguing about the $7,500, right?
Not primarily, no. Their big claim was much more fundamental. They argued the state and city acted fraudulently and in bad faith.
How so? What was their specific argument there?
They basically said, look, there were other ways to do this. They suggested alternative designs, like maybe elevating the freeway over 99th Street, or the city using just a simple service road instead of taking a permanent easement.
So they weren't just fighting the price, they were fighting the taking itself, arguing it wasn't truly necessary in the way it was done.
Precisely. And that throws us right into the main legal battle, necessity. Could the defendants challenge the necessity of the taking by claiming bad faith or fraud?
And the California Supreme Court delivered a pretty clear answer, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, a resounding no.
They really doubled down on the principle that deciding the necessity of a public project, like is it needed, where should it go, how much land, that's a job for the legislature, not the courts.
Okay, let's dig into that legislative determination. Why do courts give so much weight to what the legislature decides on necessity?
Well, it fundamentally comes down to the separation of powers, you know. The legislature makes policy, decides what the public needs. They delegate eminent domain power to agencies to get it done. The courts, their main role here is constitutional oversight. Is the taking for a real public use? Was there just compensation? Public use wasn't really the fight in Chevalier.
So the court isn't supposed to judge if the freeway itself was a good idea, just if the process was constitutionally sound.
Exactly. The Chevalier Court was very clear. Questioning the project's wisdom or necessity itself, that's stepping into the legislative arena.
It's like the court saying, we check the public use box and the just compensation box, the why this project, why here box, that belongs to the legislature.
Precisely. And they even pointed to the California Constitution. It says a resolution from the governing body declaring a taking necessary is conclusive evidence of that necessity.
Conclusive evidence. That sounds pretty final.
It's a very high bar. It means once the agency follows the rules and formally declares necessity, that specific point is generally settled, legally speaking.
So even when Goodspeed and Hyland came with alternative plans suggesting different road designs,
The court effectively said, take those ideas to the city council or the state agency. That's not our department. Even allegations of bad faith or abuse of discretion, the court stated, don't automatically turn necessity into a judicial question in eminent domain. That was a key takeaway.
got it. But the case wasn't only about necessity, right? They also raised some procedural points.
Yes, a couple of things. One was challenging the trial court's decision to consolidate the two lawsuits, the states and the cities, into one trial.
And why did the Supreme Court say that consolidation was okay?
They saw the two actions as deeply connected. You couldn't really separate cutting off the old access from creating the new access. They were two sides of the same coin, part of the single freeway project.
Makes sense.
And since they found no real prejudice to the defendants, like, it didn't unfairly hurt their ability to argue their case. They upheld the consolidation.
What about excluded evidence? That came up too, didn't it?
It did. The defendants wanted to show the jury their plans for future improvements on the land.
Trying to argue the land was potentially more valuable, thus increasing severance damages.
That was likely the goal. But the court agreed with excluding it. Why? Because those were future plans. Speculative. Severance damages have to be based on the current market value at the time of the taking and the actual impact on that value, not on what might be built later.
So based on present reality, not future dreams. Makes sense from a valuation standpoint. Any other procedural fights? Jury instructions, maybe?
Yeah, they objected to some jury instructions in the verdict form, but again, the Supreme Court found no errors there. They felt everything was consistent with the view that these were interdependent parts of one big project, including how the jury should consider those special benefits.
Okay. Now, you mentioned earlier this wasn't a unanimous decision. There was a dissent.
Correct. Justice McComb dissented. Unfortunately, our source material doesn't really elaborate on why he disagreed.
Okay. But it's still important to know it wasn't a clean sweep.
Absolutely. It highlights that these aren't always easy calls, even at the highest court level.
So, boiling it all down. For a law student trying to really get their head around eminent domain, what's the absolute core lesson from Chevalier?
I'd say it's the extremely narrow path for challenging a taking on grounds other than public use or just compensation.
Yeah.
Chevalier locks down the idea that necessity is the legislature's call, and courts generally won't second guess it, even if there are claims of bad faith or better alternatives.
So for you as a future lawyer, you need to understand the courts see their role primarily as enforcing constitutional guardrails, fair process, fair payment, not really critiquing the policy behind the project.
It really underlines that tension, doesn't it? The collective need versus the individual right.
It really does, which raises a tough question. If a government agency is maybe using eminent domain, questionably, perhaps for reasons that aren't purely about public benefit, what options do owners really have after Chevalier? This ruling seems to give a lot of power to the government's determination.
It undeniably does. The Chevalier majority prioritized legislative finality. It sets a very high hurdle if you want to argue in court this taking wasn't truly necessary or they did this in bad faith. It definitely limits judicial oversight in that specific aspect.
Right. So let's recap for everyone listening. The key holding in Chevalier: when a legislative body says a taking is necessary, that decision is basically conclusive evidence. Judicial review on that specific point is incredibly limited.
Exactly. The practical upshot: if you're a property owner facing eminent domain, your main fight, legally speaking, is almost always going to be about getting just compensation, challenging the project's fundamental necessity or wisdom. That's usually an uphill battle in court after Chevalier.
So we'll leave you with this to think about. Given this strong deference to legislative power affirmed in Chevalier, what does that mean for the long-term balance between government projects and individual property rights? And what ethical questions pop up when the government's claim of necessity is so hard to challenge judicially? It's complex, and Chevalier is right at the heart of it. Thanks for exploring this deep dive with us.